My challenge this morning is to take a theological concept and put a very important concept called vicarious and atoning suffering and to make it concrete, to make it understandable. Of doing that is the challenge. There was a professor in the United States at the University of Chicago. His name was Alan Bloom. And in 1988-89, he published a book called The Closing of the American Mind. And in that book, he spoke about how higher universities have absolutely failed the college students. They have failed them because they only teach what we would call productive knowledge. Productive knowledge is, I teach you how to make a living. But directive knowledge, which they fail to teach, is how to live. And they act like we started to live only in the last century or two, that mankind didn't exist before that. Cardinal Newman, in the book, The Idea of a University, he explained the purpose of the university. Basically, it is this: that you go to the university to be able to answer the question, who am I? What's the purpose of life? Wisdom. And if you cannot answer that question, your education is useless. And so the idea of Socrates, know thyself, of knowing why you are here and the purpose of your life, we can learn about that from those who have lived before us, after Christ and before Christ. And they answered the question of why I am here. And this morning I'd like to open up to you a play that was written 500 years before Christ, that has a great amount of wisdom for us who are living today. In a city called Athens, there were many incredibly talented men, playwrights, Sophocles, Aeschylus. But there was a playwright called Euripides, and he wrote a play which I'd like to comment on this morning. The play was called Alcestes. The play itself is about the king of Thessaly. King of Thessaly, his name was Amytus. And in mythology, Apollo the god fell out of favor with Jupiter. And he was put for a period of time out of Mount Olympus, where the gods would stay in the heavens. And he was sent down to Earth. When he came to Earth, the one who gave him hospitality was the king of Thessaly. And he was very grateful. But the time came for him to return back to Mount Olympus. And he was grateful to the king, but he also heard sad news that according to the fates, the king was going to die very soon. And he told the king, he said, but in gratitude, I have asked the fates and the gods if they would do this favor, that they would spare you this death. But in order for you to be spared this death, you have to find someone in your kingdom who will die in your place. And so the king was shocked that he was going to die, but grateful that his death could be avoided if someone would die in his place. And so he started to go through the kingdom. And it's one thing to ask people to pay taxes, but when you add beyond paying taxes, by the way, would you die in my place? And the people would say, I'll give you your taxes, but are you out of your mind? And he started to go to person after person, will you die in my place? And they all would look at him and say, are you crazy? And so he could find no one. And finally he went to his parents. And he said, parents should sacrifice for their children. Will you die in my place? And they said to him, what kind of a son have we raised? Are you kidding? Life is precious. Life is special. Each one has their own life. We don't have another one to take. You die in your own place. You die yourself. Don't ask us. That's your cross. Each one should carry their own cross. And they would not. And finally, he found someone who would die in his place. It was his wife. Her name was Alcestes. And he said, oh, how blessed I am with such a wife. She is willing to die in my place. And he accepts it. And she begins to get sick and sicker. And the word goes forth throughout the kingdom that the king's wife is dying in his place. And more sympathy goes to her than to him. And everyone is saying, how could he do such a thing? And as she gets sicker and sicker, he finds out he's king, but no one respects him at all. And the very one that loves him the most, he is losing because she is dying in his place. And suddenly he comes to his senses and he pleads with the gods, could you reverse that? And of course they have a deus ex machina, a surprise ending to reverse it. But you know, it makes a point of our times. Do the people today, are they willing to carry their own cross? Or do we want someone to die in their place? And we do this constantly. You say we do? Yes, we do. The unborn child is asked, not asked, imposed again and again. To die in place of another person, not a life for a life, rarely, ever. But the child's life is taken for convenience sake. The unborn child is put to death for reputation's sake. The unborn child is put to death for any and every reason and no reason. Because we will not carry our own cross. The mom, the dad, and we impose it upon that child. Those who lose their children, they know afterwards, my God, I lost that which is the most precious thing in my life, the child who loved me. For what? For what purpose? For what sake? And so we have a loss of a sense of carrying one's own cross, a loss of a sense of suffering, having a value and entering into it deeply. You know, I visited a man, his name was Frank McCabe, and I knew him for many, many years. He was a tall man, about 6'5", he had 10 children. Whenever there was a gathering, he was the life of the party. In all his life, he went about doing good for people. Everyone loved Frank McCabe. But at the end of his life, not as an old man, but as a middle-aged man, God really leveled him. He was not able to walk. He lost his sight. He was in a bed of pain. And I heard of this and hadn't seen Frank in a while. Hadn't been moved out of the parish, but I knew him well. And I went to the hospital. And I said, what do I say to Frank lying in that bed of pain? What words? And I said, Frank. And he recognized my voice. And I didn't say anything to him. He said to me, is that you, Father Phil? I said, yes, it is. Frank. He said, something happened last night. And everything has changed. I said, what happened, Frank? He said, you know, I spent all my life actively going and doing the will of God. That was easy. He said, to do God's will is easy, easy. He said, but on this bed of pain last night, I learned something. Jesus, when he came to this earth, he did the Father's will. Actively cured people, taught, did everything. But at the end of his life, he said, the end of his life, he was limited to the cross, a bed of pain, and he had to accept his Father's will. He said, but as the Father looked down upon Jesus hanging on the cross in his final hours, they were his finest hours. He was redeeming the world by accepting the will of the Father. And he said, last night I was lying here in the darkness and I realized, my God, this bed that I'm limited is how Jesus was limited at the end of his life. And he said, I have learned that these are my finest hours in the eyes of God. I'm not doing the Father's will, I am accepting the Father's will. And this suffering, united to the sufferings of Christ, is the finest thing I've ever done and a source of great graces. I am at peace. There was another doctor I knew, a Dr. Chu, a convert to the faith, a Chinese doctor from mainland China. And he got his doctorate from Johns Hopkins University. But it was his wife that converted him. It was his wife from which he said he learned everything. And she got cancer, and she suffered greatly. And he lived with this. And he couldn't understand it, that she was beyond peace. And finally he said to her, would you explain to me what has happened? I can't understand you. And she said, you know, to accept God's will gives you peace when you are suffering. But there's something beyond that. He said, there's something beyond peace? She said, yes. If you take the sufferings that God gives to you and embrace them, you go beyond peace to pure joy. I have joy, not simply peace. Because I have not gone beyond resignation and acceptance to embracing the will of my Father. Suffering embraced. You know, there was a bus driver who took a group of children up on a day's outing up the mountains. And he was driving the children back, and was down a steep mountainside. And it was very important he keep his eye on the road, because the mountain was on the left, but on the right was a tremendous drop. And if he went too much to that drop, the bus would go over, the children would all be killed. And as he was coming down the mountainside, the brakes on the bus, he began to realize there's something the matter. The brakes in the bus, they began to fail. He realized, my God, I have no brakes for this bus. And he started to pick up speed going down the mountain. He said, I've got to keep this on the road. I've got to these children in this bus. And he kept going and going. The bus got faster and faster. And he said, if I can keep it on the road, I know down at the bottom there's a long level plain that hopefully I will just guide it and the bus will be able eventually to come to a stop. And so he kept his eye on the road. He was coming down, but at the end of the road, before you go into this long plain, there was a gate that was closed, but he could go through it. But when he got to the bottom, he saw a little boy sitting on the gate. He said, oh my God, if I keep going straight, that boy will die. If I go to my right, the whole children on this bus will die. I have to keep going. And he did. And the little boy died. And when the other parents of the children heard about the whole thing, they came to thank him for saving their children's lives. But when they got there, they couldn't find him. They said, where is he? They said, oh, he was in such a state of shock that they took him away in the ambulance. And they said, well, we could understand that what happened to him, what he went through. They said, no, you can't understand it. I said, what do you mean you can't understand it? They said, because you have to understand, the little boy on that fence was the bus driver's only son. And when he went through that gate, his only son was lost. That you have to understand. But he did it for the sake of your children. He did it for the sake of your children. My friends, Mary said, fiat, and the word took flesh. And as a result of that, Jesus was able to suffer and atone for us. But think about this. How great a love that God sent his only son to die in our place. For we who were disobedient, sinful. You know, it's difficult enough to die for your friends, to die for someone you love and who loves you. But are you willing to die and give everything for someone who is your enemy? Someone who has turned away from you? That's not human. That is divine. But that is the final challenge that God gave to us before he died and which he lived. The final commandment that we tend to forget, that Jesus gave to each of us, was love your enemy. Lay down your life for your enemy. You're kidding. No, I'm not. I am going today out to Calvary. And I'm going to die. You know it's dangerous. I know it's dangerous. Why are you going? I'm going there to die. For whom? For the person who's going to put me to death. For the people who are caught in this culture of death. I am going to die for them. That's divine. That is Christian. That is vicarious atoning suffering. And the final challenge that God gave to each of us is to die for our enemies. You will not have peace on earth without forgiveness. You will not have forgiveness without Christian love. It's not human to die for your enemy. That is divine. And we have received the virtue, the power of the gift of charity. Charity is not being nice to those that love you. Charity is a power that God gives to each of us to lay down our lives and to forgive even our enemies. And that has to be the mentality of the pro-life people. I say to you, the unborn children dying are not part of the culture of death. The unborn children dying, their death is the result of the culture of death. They're not part of it. And the ones who need our help when we go to the modern day places of Calvary, where innocent blood is being shed, the ones who need our help are the people caught in the culture of death, the ones who are not carrying their own cross, the ones who impose the cross on the children, the ones who do not understand the eternal, everlasting love of God, that He would not even spare His own Son. He let Him die in our place. That we are challenged to make up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. Jesus was able to atone and suffer for us because Mary said fiat. Jesus was able to atone and suffer for us because He became one with us when divinity was united to humanity in the person Jesus Christ. And we who have been united now to divinity through baptism, to God's life, we are to continue that type of presence and living in the world today. That we make up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for His body, the church, by making present this unconditional, everlasting love of God for mankind. When a woman has an abortion, so frequently after it, she speaks to me outside the abortion clinics, because I do not go there primarily to save babies. I go there to save souls. And so I speak to the mothers before the abortions and after the abortions, when they desperately need Jesus Christ. And so often they will say to me, "Father, after what I have just done, could God ever love me again?" And I say, "Mother, wrong question, wrong question. God never stopped loving you. The eternal love of God. It is we who stop loving God. God is an enemy of no one. It is we who become enemies of God." And our challenge given to us by Jesus before He died was to make present to the world that desperately needs someone to die in their place, someone to atone through His sufferings for our sins, to be the presence of Jesus, making present this unconditional, everlasting love of God to the people caught in a culture of death. And we do that most especially where we go to the place where the cross is imposed upon others that should be carried by others, the children. And the ones who do this more than the child is innocent, never committed a moral evil in its life. There's no impediment in the soul of that child to receive the fullness of life. Those children go to God. But the people involved in this culture of death, they are involved in a moral evil, and their souls are at risk. And they need someone to make present to them this unconditional, everlasting love of God, especially after they do this. They know they've been taken. They are like King Amidus, who asks his wife to die in his place. And after she says yes, he loses all peace. He loses a sense of his own worth. And he says, my God, what have I done? Change it. And so often, the women, the people, the mom and the dad who ask the child to die in their place, after it happens, oh, do they want that changed? Their first reaction is, oh, thanks be to God, my womb is empty. I can get on with my life again. And then what happens is suddenly the mother says, my God, my womb is empty. This was a child of God. What have I done? It's then that they need people who call themselves Christians, pro-life, to be present to them and to make known to them the everlasting, unconditional love of Jesus Christ. The work of Jesus goes on. He is risen. And he now uses us, who call ourselves Christians, to make present his atoning, vicarious, suffering, unconditional love for this world. He asks us, through us, with us, and in us, to make present his everlasting love to a people caught in the culture of death and darkness, without hope, with a sense of despair. And so we go, and we go to the places, we will do so on Saturday morning, but we must have the right mentality and outlook and understanding if we are to be effective. We must have the mind of Christ. We must suffer with Christ. We must make present to the people who are protesting, to the people who bring the children there. That's why we go. We go for them. And secondarily for the babies. And when we do this, we are continuing what Jesus did when he went to Calvary. Peter said, it's dangerous there. I know it, Peter. Get behind me. You don't understand a thing. Do not be afraid to go to Calvary. It's where Jesus went at the end of his life. It must be where we go. Where's Calvary? Calvary is where the people are most lost, who are not carrying their cross, who are lose, and when they make the child, like Acestes, carry their cross, they will regret it, and then they need Jesus and his unconditional, everlasting love made known to them through we who call ourselves Christians. And when we do that, we fulfill the final command that Jesus gave to us. Love your enemy, change the world, and I will give you the power to do so. I will give you the ability to love. And when you do, everything will be changed. There's no shortcut to self. There's no shortcut to removing the culture of death. It requires Christians to be Christians. There's no shortcut to peace on earth. It requires Christians to love their enemies. There's no shortcut to holiness. But by the grace of God, we have been given that grace to atone and vicariously and suffer and make up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ and go to the modern day Calvaries today and to make present to those who are putting the child to death that Jesus still loves them. That there is reason for hope. There's reason for not being in despair. And so this morning I say to you, yes, this concept of making up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ, this concept of making present the forgiveness of Christ, of being Christ, is still very relevant, real, and necessary. And I just say to you, if you're able to come with us on Saturday morning to modern-day Calvary and Golgotha, the place where the babies are dying, the people are despairing, please have this mindset. Please have this attitude. And when we do, God will bless what we do, and everything will change. And there will be peace on earth with the forgiveness and mercy of God made present through His holy people. God bless you.